The American Herbalist Guild presents its 13th annual AHG Symposium, titled Comparative Medicine for Clinical Practice, held October 10th through 13th, 2002. The following presentation was recorded live at the George Williams Conference Center at Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
Say good morning to you guys.
Can you actually pull that door shut if you don't mind?
I'll say good morning. And what we're going to talk about today is traditional Chinese medical principles regarding to gynecological imbalances. My name's Roy Upton. And I personally think that traditional Chinese medicine has a tremendous amount, and my experience tells me this as well, has a tremendous amount to offer American healthcare in the area of women's healthcare specifically. The reason being is Western medicine has virtually nothing really effective for women's healthcare issues. I mean, what do we have? We have surgical intervention, hardcore hormonal intervention, which, you know, of recent months has shown us that it's not as good of an option as we previously thought. There are about 600,000 hysterectomies performed every year. 350,000 of those are considered to be unnecessary by second opinion. Hysterectomies are being performed for everything from endometriosis to fibroids, ovarian cysts. There's this, you know, percentage of lumpectomies that are now being performed versus complete hysterectomies, but there's still a prevailing notion that if you have fibroids and not resolving to hormonal therapy, or if you don't want to get pregnant, because that is another therapy, is that you get pregnant, because same with endometriosis, because a lot of times the fibroids of the endometriosis will resolve during pregnancy, but then a lot of times it comes back within the first or second year after pregnancy. So again, not very good options for women. And there also hasn't been a lot of medical research dollars expended in women's health care until Maxine Waters hit the Capitol Hill. And Maxine Waters, Congresswoman, has been trying to fight for women's health rights for a long time and getting research dollars spent in that way. But there are also not a lot of options in Western herbal medicine from the perspective of having a diagnostic understanding as to how we go about dealing with gynecological conditions. Now, we all know about Western herbs that are used as quote-unquote female herbs, raspberry leaf, for example, vitex, black cohosh, the viburnums, cramp bark, and black haw. Anybody else have any popular women's herbs that they, michella, partridge berry? The cohosh is black and blue cohosh. But we don't have a diagnostic rationale to attach those two to say, when do we specifically apply black versus blue cohosh? Viburnum opulus versus viburnum prunifolium. Vitex instead of black cohosh in menopausal symptoms. What are our differentiating principles? Unfortunately, we don't really have them, simply because we don't have in Western herbal medicine an inherent diagnostic system that goes with our practice. We're stuck using a Western diagnostic paradigm. So a woman comes and says, I have infertility, I have endometriosis, I have fibroids, ovarian cysts. So then we go and we do whatever we're going to do, but we don't have our own diagnostic rationale to tell us what we should be doing. Chinese medicine helps to provide that to us. It's been a subspecialty in Chinese medicine for a few thousand years. And in my experience over the last 20 years, it's extremely effective for the treatment of the majority of functional gynecological imbalances that are affecting women. And this predominantly includes fibroids, ovarian cysts, functional infertility, endometriosis, fibrocystic breasts, irregular menses, dysmenorrhea, amenorrhea, things like that. These are the things that can most easily be resolved with Chinese medicine, and sometimes in as little as 2 months, sometimes in as little as 6 months. Very seldom does it take more than a year to see symptoms like this or imbalances like this resolve. The one anomaly, the one exception to the rule, what I already mentioned, is cancer. Cancer is a completely different pathology from functional gynecological imbalances, so that I'm not even going to address cancer, breast cancer, or uterine cancer or ovarian cancer. They're just totally, it's a total different pathology, total different diagnostics, total different treatment protocol. So this is really focused on functional gynecological imbalances. So let me just read something real quick so that you can get an idea of what Chinese medicine says about gynecology. And everything in Chinese medicine stems from actually one book, which is the Yellow Emperor's Classic of Internal Medicine. Now this is what they say. They say that the woman's essence flows in 7-year cycles. The kidney energy of a girl becomes abundant at the age of 7. Her baby teeth are replaced by permanent ones and the hair grows. At the age of 14, the dew of heaven, that's menses, the dew of heaven arrives. The directing vessel begins to flow. The penetrating vessel is flourishing. The period comes regularly and she can conceive. At the age of 21, the kidney essence peaks. The wisdom teeth come out and growth is at its utmost. At the age of 28, tendons and bones become strong. The hair grows longest and the body is strong and flourishing. At the age of 35, the yang ming channels begin to weaken. The complexion starts to wither and the hair begins to fall. At the age of 42, the three yang channels are weak. The face darkens and the hair begins to turn gray. At the age of 49, the directing vessel is empty, the penetrating vessel depleted, the dew of heaven dries up, menopause. The earth passage, the uterus, is not open, and weakness and infertility set in. This is how Chinese medicine views the functional reproductive life of a woman. It's interesting to note the ages that are associated with it, because it's probably reflective of life expectancy back in those days. And now they might have a difference of opinion. They might modify those numbers today. Some of the interesting things to point out here, though, is that the menses is called the dew of heaven. Think how beautiful of a analogy that is, as compared to how we tend to view menses in the West. You know, this is a dirty thing or scary thing, or our mothers, my mother didn't teach my sisters about menses. My older sister had 2 cycles before my mother ever knew. My wife had 2 cycles before her mother ever knew. Both of them went to older sisters or my older cousin in my sister's case. Or the uterus being viewed as the earth's passage. And this is beautiful. What the word vagina actually means knife sheath. It's a totally different concept of how Chinese and Western philosophy views women gynecological anatomy. The uterus is also considered to be a cup, like a vessel, the earth's vessel. It holds the blood in its place. And then when it's filled, it falls out. The uterus is called a curious organ. But the name for the uterus actually means where the fetus grows. There's many different names to it, but most of them translate to mean where the fetus grows. So that's just the basic principles of how Chinese medicine philosophically looked at the reproductive system. Now, when we think about pathologically, or actually, no, I won't start with pathology. From a traditional Chinese medical perspective, the health of the gynecological system is intimately associated with 2 primary things. The presence of blood. I already used that. just forget that all this five element stuff is here, but presence of blood and movement of blood. Those are the two basic fundamental principles for the promotion of gynecological health in a nutshell. And this is what we predominantly see clinically. The second part, besides, so you have one, presence of blood, two, the movement of blood, three is healthy kidney chi. The fourth one is regular movement of chi via the liver. Fifth one is production of blood by the spleen. Kidney, liver, spleen, present movement. And a subset of the kidney qi aspect is called jing. In the first case, women need blood in order to have a healthy gynecological system because it's intimately associated with the flow of blood via menses. Similarly, a woman's iron needs are higher than a man because a woman loses that blood every month. So in order for there to be a healthy gynecological system, in order for the uterus, Earth's passage, to be filled up, blood has to be present. If blood isn't present, then the gynecological system withers. Similarly, blood has to continue to surge throughout the pelvic area. Blood has to get to the ovaries, has to get to the uterine tissue, has to get to the fallopian tubes, has to flow smoothly through the pelvic region. If that doesn't happen, what arises? Menstrual cramps, endometriosis, ovarian cysts, and fibroids, and certain cases of functional infertility. If you think about menstrual cramps, hormonally, the body's ready to give up that blood, but for some reason it doesn't. The uterus goes into spasm. And usually, at least I'm told, I don't know this personally, right? Let's get this straight now. What I'm told is second day of menses, once the blood comes full force, the cramps go away. Stuck blood. Endometriosis, the normal pathway for blood to flow is blocked. Endometriosis is blood building up outside the uterus, so it's pooling in a place where it's not supposed to be, causes intense pain, causes intense bleeding in many cases. Fibroids, just like a river, as long as water is flowing through the river, things don't kind of gather. You get a little area of stagnation, you start getting sticks and rocks and dirt and fungi and molds and bacteria start to grow and fester, and everything stagnates and can block the river. Same thing happens in the body if blood doesn't flow. Ovarian cysts, same thing. Infertility, conception is blocked. Stuck blood. All these things come under the dominion of the liver, which from a traditional Chinese medical perspective, it's said that the liver controls the smooth flow of qi and blood and rules the emotions. So it's the liver that makes sure that everything is moving through the pelvic area. From the kidney qi perspective, kidney qi is exceedingly important with regards to infertility, functional infertility, in that the kidney qi is said to rule sexual reproduction, maturation, sexual development, and sexual desire. It's the root, it gives us the root energy of our body. It's like our body's innate power plant. Nothing else can happen without kidney qi. There's another aspect of kidney qi that's called jing, J-I-N-G. And jing translates to mean essence. A physical manifestation of jing in a man is sperm. It's the essence that the human organism has to carry on life, reproduction. The jing in a woman is the ovum. Again, the essence of a woman that's needed to carry on life and procreate. Unfortunately, the jing is a precious, precious material, or a precious, precious fluid, or a precious, precious life force. And unfortunately, from most people's Chinese perspective, there's a finite amount of jing. There's only a certain amount of sperm that a man produces on a monthly basis. There's only one egg that is released, or in normal cases, on a monthly basis, and there are a finite number of eggs in the woman. And once those eggs are used up, that's it. So there's a finite amount of jing. From a man's perspective, it's easily squandered through ejaculatory sexual practices. That essence is given up freely, not always in the act of creating a new life. And from a TCM perspective, it's squandered because it's such a precious essence. The amount of energy that it takes to build that essence in a man is tremendous. And so when he loses it, he's making himself old before his time from a Chinese medical perspective. And again, the limitation of the ovums of the eggs in a woman is the woman's limitation. As I said, the liver controls the smooth flow of qi and blood, so if stagnation is occurring in the pelvic area, as manifested by fibroids, ovarian cysts, and endometriosis, then we have to use herbs that regulate liver qi. And the last one is the production of blood, which is the same as the presence of blood. But from a Chinese medical perspective, the spleen is the primary organ associated with digestion, assimilation, and the absorption and transportation of nutrients and blood throughout the body. So it says, the Chinese medicine says that the spleen produces the blood, the liver stores and helps to move and regulate the flow of blood. And as long as blood is present and moving smoothly throughout the gynecological system, we can have gynecological health. Given that as a backdrop, the primary pathological conditions associated with imbalances, reproductive imbalances, is first blood deficiency. So we have to be able to recognize, how do we diagnose blood deficiency? First thing, you're going to have cold hands and feet. Why? Simply because there's not enough blood getting to the extremities. So it kind of consolidates in the middle. The person's going to be subject to chill, same reason. Blood doesn't get to the surface of our body to keep us warm. Low energy, simply not enough nutritive power to drive our system. Why would you have malnourishment or not enough nutritive force? Well, that's either because we're eating a crappy diet or we have malabsorption. We're not digesting and assimilating the foods that we need to be. In the first case, we see blood deficiency exceedingly common in vegetarians. And this is just purely from a clinical medicine perspective. Throw philosophical ideologies out the window for a second with regards to the killing of animals or the way that meat is raised and stuff like that. But just from a purely medical perspective, we see a lot of vegetarians who are severely blood deficient, even macrobiotic people. It doesn't mean you can't have a healthy macrobiotic or vegetarian life. It's just that we don't often see it from a clinical perspective. simply because a lot of people tend to, a lot of people on the vegetarian side of things tend to lean on the side of salad greens, fruits, and lighter foods, not heavy root vegetables, and they're not really good at combining their foods. So we believe you can have a healthy life without eating animal products. However, we just don't see it that often. Cold hands and feet, low energy, lightheadedness, simply because the blood doesn't get up to the head, so the person could feel faint. Pale complexion, as I said, you look at the tongue, and the tongue is pale. The color of the tongue is pale. You feel the pulse, and the pulse is weak or very deep, simply because there's not enough blood to physically fill up the pulse. So weak pulse, oftentimes a slow pulse. The person will tend to be low energy, a quieter person, versus somebody like me who's pretty out there, you know, pretty what? Exuberant, thank you, that's a nice way to say it. So that's the first thing that you want to look at in your patient base is, do they exhibit signs of blood deficiency? And the only thing, you really only have to do one thing. You have to say, you know, hi, nice to meet you, Lauren, you know. You know, you just have to feel their hand. I mean, cold weather, you know, just coming in from the cold aside, but after a person's been sitting in your office for 15 minutes or something, or, you know, where you just, you know, either feel their hand or even just feel their face sometimes, and you can get an idea of if they're blood deficient. Secondly, you don't even have to ask a question. You usually just have to look at a person's complexion and see if they're blood deficient. A couple of other things you can do is, one is the fingernails, which you probably all know. You just press on the fingernail. It turns white because you're pushing blood away. You let it up. See how fast my blood comes back? It's like instant red because I'm this yanged out guy. I'm this totally yanged out testosterone guy. You have to look at, actually, it'd be a good exercise. Take a look at each of your fingers, you know, and not each of your individual ones, but like you look at her, you look at her, you look at her. Press it, let it go. And how long does it take for the blood to come back? There's no specific timing of when it should come back. You just get a relative bead. It's easily seen that my red comes back almost instantly. Other people's don't. It takes a while for that color to come back. If it's white to start with, then you, again, really good sign of blood deficiency or poor circulation, just the blood isn't getting to the extremities. Another way to do it is by pulling down the conjunctiva, the capillaries of the veins that are underneath the eyelids are those that are the most closest to the surface of the body, so they're easily seen. So I don't know if you can see mine, but they're probably pretty red. Is that... Again, because I'm a, again, good question, should they be? Balance and everything. What you're not looking for, right or wrong, good or bad, should be, shouldn't be. You're just looking for signs. You know that at least there's good blood flow there. Now the question would be, what if it was really red? Then maybe there's too much blood flow, which would indicate potentially what? Heat, high blood pressure. Because heat rises in nature and raises the blood pressure. But again, take a look, just if you would, just take a look around, you know, at each other's conjunctiva, just to get a relative bead of what different people's conjunctivas look like. And you? Did you see her? Can I see you?
Yeah.
And you?
Yeah.
Let me see you guys.
Can I see? You say it's a little pale, Roy?
A little pale. Okay. So anyways, if you get a chance a little later, do that. Look at each other's eyes. And again, there's really no right or wrong, okay? What you're physically doing, you're making a little bit of a list, right? Cold hands and feet. Yes, no. Nails, eyelids, low energy, etc. And so if you go yes, yes, no, yes, no, you know, you basically just add up the list and say, is this person exhibiting more signs of blood deficiency than not? And it helps you to make that diagnosis. The therapeutic principle that goes along with that is to tonify blood. Pretty straightforward. However, there's three specific ways to tonify blood. At least three specific ways. These are the most prominent ways. The first one is to actually give blood tonics. Anybody give me an idea of a blood tonic? Dangui? People think so. All right, red clover has that reputation. I don't agree, but nevertheless, it's a good call simply because that's what is written in a lot of books, right or wrong. Danshen, Cardinopsis?
No.
Salvia? No, moves blood. Doesn't build blood, moves blood. Dangshen moves blood. Longdan? Oh, yellow dock. Yellow dock from a Western medical perspective, yes. From a Western herbal medical perspective, yes. Not from a TCM perspective. From a TCM perspective, it's bitter and cold, so it actually is eliminative, but because supposedly helps with B12 absorption or something like that, which nobody really knows, it can build blood. But the bottom line is that you physically take blood tonics. Blood tonics are those things that are nutritive. From a Chinese medical perspective, Dangui is the par excellence, the number one blood tonic pretty much used within Chinese medicine. Other ones include jujube dates, which is a blood tonic. Dazao. Yeah, you guys just get the Chinese, not the Latin in school? You get both, yeah. So that's out. And then in almost all cases of blood deficiency, you're being prescribed meat soups. They'll tell you to go get lamb or get beef heart or something like that and make a stew out of meats to build the blood. From a Western herbal medicine perspective, maybe dandelion leaf, nettles leaf, the more nutritive herbs. These are the blood tonics. So that's the first diagnosis. And that's the first treatment protocol. The second one, That's the first way to treat blood deficiency. The second way to treat blood deficiency is by using spleen qi tonics. Spleen qi tonics. What did I say about the spleen? The spleen, from a TCM perspective, is the primary organ associated with producing blood and is associated with digestion and assimilation. So by using spleen qi tonics, you increase the amount of nourishment that you derive from food. Very important. A lot of times, the thing that's going to tip you off to somebody who needs spleen qi tonification is if they have gas, indigestion, abdominal bloating. Or if they eat a meal but feel really tired after eating a meal because the body has to work extra hard to try to derive the energy from that food. They don't have to eat more food. They got to increase their digestive fire so that they can use the energy from the food more efficiently. The primary herbs from a TCM perspective for building blood through spleen qi tonification include astragalus, atractolotus, and cardinopsis. Astragalus, wang qi, atractolotus, bai zhu, cardinopsis, dan shen. The other one's called fang dan shen. They usually differentiate between the two. Shanyao, Dioscorea?
Right.
Dioscorea more consolidates kidney yin essence. It is a spleen tonic,
reproductive qi.
From the perspective of consolidating kidney chi and kidney yin essence, yes. Not necessarily from a blood perspective. It is a nutritive tonic, though, because it's a starchy root vegetable, wild yam. So you could do that, but from a primary TCM perspective, consolidates kidney yin and kidney essence. So that's the second way to tonify blood is through spleen qi tonics. The second category, blood stagnation, the signs and symptoms that you're going to look for are anything associated with stagnation. So that means fibroids, lumps, growths, symptoms that come and go. Fibrocystic breasts, for example, or even premenstrual syndrome. We have emotional highs and lows, premenstrual pains, such as migraines, any symptoms or signs that come and go are indicative of stagnation. Some of the gross signs that you're going to observe, if you do palpation, if a woman comes and says, yes, I have uterine pain, ovarian pain, or abdominal pain, and you physically palpate that woman's abdomen, if the pain is localized and stabbing and gets worse with pressure, that's classified as blood stagnation. Blood stagnation. And it's considered an excess condition that you need to reduce, you need to resolve, you need to break through that stagnation to get it moving. If the pain is more ambiguous, where the woman says, yes, I have pain in my abdomen, and you say, well, tell me where it is, and they'll do it themselves. They'll feel and say, right around here, or you'll palpate and say, no, not quite there. Yeah, wait a minute. No, a little higher. Can't just get a bead on it. That's the diagnostic differentiation of qi stagnation pain. Why? It's because energy is not fixed. Energy is always moving. So when you touch somebody, you're moving the qi away. And so if it's associated with qi stagnation, you just moved it away from where you pressed. So you can't quite find it. But nevertheless, it causes pain. The nice part about this is you don't have to worry about it, because whenever you need to treat blood and or qi stagnation, you got to do both. So the therapies that are geared toward alleviating qi stagnation are very similar to those that are used to alleviate blood stagnation. However, it just gives you a stronger diagnostic focal point, which means maybe when you're building your formula, you're going to put more herbs for qi stagnation than blood stagnation, or vice versa. But there's still going to be some of one in the other and other in the one. There are at least two ways to move blood. The first way to move blood is to use herbs that physically break up blood stagnation. And those are the blood thinning herbs of Chinese medicine, or of any medicine, doesn't matter. Dangui is the, again, premier break up blood stagnation herb for gynecological conditions. There are other stronger herbs that more strongly break up blood, but for gynecology, because Dangui also builds the blood, it's considered in just the most highly respected gynecological herb. Second one is the salvia, dangshen, salvia miltiarizer, or Chinese salvia. A third one is called corydalis, C-O-R-Y-D-A-L-I-S. I actually forget the Chinese name. And another one, big one, ligusticum, L-I-G-U-S-T-I-C-U-M. All of these herbs are very specific for relieving pain, gynecological pains. but specifically gynecological pains that correlate with a diagnosis of blood stagnation. Some of these herbs potentially can be rich in coumarins, which are the Western analogs to blood thinning herbs, but that's a whole controversy in and of itself. Sweet melilot is probably the most, and possibly red clover, were two of the herbs that were used to kind of vitalize blood from a coumarin perspective. But coumarins have to be changed into a different form of coumarin, and some people say it can be done, some people say it doesn't, some people say it happens if the plants are rotting before the coumarins are actually active. So I really don't know the truth of all that. So I stick with the Chinese herbs. Daoren, persica, a peach seed, peach pit, is another major herb for dispelling blood stagnation. So these are, because they all dispel blood stagnation, the primary caution that you have to have when using these botanicals is to use them very carefully if there are symptoms of bleeding, such as in potentially in fibroids and endometriosis, so that you don't promote the flow of blood externally more than is already happening in that person. The second way to move blood is to use herbs that regulate liver qi. Herbs that regulate liver qi. Remember I said that the liver controls the smooth flow of qi and blood and rules the emotions. So you use herbs like cyperus, C-Y-P-E-R-U-S, cyperus, or shangfu in Chinese, or sarsaparilla, muxiang in Chinese medicine. By regulating liver qi, absolutely.
What causes them, like I know lots of people who have them, they don't bleed, other people who have them, and they do.
No, because I'm not sure there's an answer as to why some people's bleed and other people's don't. I don't know, and that might be my own deficiency of knowledge. What I don't know enough about from a Western medical perspective is diagnostic staging of fibroids. There's some that are inside, some that are outside, and some that are within. I'm willing to bet it's the ones that are within that bleed the most. They're also the hardest to resolve, this I do know. But I don't know if there's a correlative symptom picture that those ones that are within the fibroid, the muscular tissue itself, that those are better bleeders or more prone to bleeding. My guess would be that they would be because it's more innervated, it's tissue that's more innervated with blood. So, but it's just a concept. I usually stick with the TCM diagnostics, and I wish I could answer. It's a great question. So that's the second way, is to use herbs that regulate liver qi. The way that you recognize, as I said, liver qi stagnation symptoms is anything that comes and goes, emotional highs and lows, hyper and hypoglycemia, hyperthyroid, energy highs and lows, mood fluctuations, breast cysts or any tumors or cysts or things, the symptoms that come and go are all going to be signs of stagnation. The third pathological condition is kidney qi, and this is not in any necessarily any order, except that blood deficiency and blood stagnation rule with when you're talking about 80-90% of the gynecological conditions coming into our clinic anyways, is our clinic I used to be associated with, blood deficiency, blood stagnation. Another one, kidney qi deficiency. And what this is going to result in is infertility, the inability to conceive, or sometimes the inability to hold on to the developing fetus. So miscarriages, abortions, things like that. Because the Jing rules, that kidney Jing rules sexual reproduction. Also, kidney yang, which gives the body its vitality and warmth, kidney yang is needed to hold on to things. It gives the muscles the strength, the tissue the strength to hold on to things. If you have kidney yang deficiency, you may not hold on to the baby. The developing fetus, the egg has to attach to the uterine wall. The uterine wall has to have a certain amount of tonicity in order for the egg to adhere. If the uterine wall is really mushy because it's lacking in yang or qi, or not enervated well with blood, it's really soft, mushy like a sponge, rather than really tense like a muscle, muscle fibrous tissue. The egg might implant temporarily, but then when hormonal fluctuations happen that first month that are usually indicative of your menstrual cycle, progesterone levels from a Western medical perspective may not be high enough to compensate, and so the baby falls off. For many years, women were, before we had pregnancy tests, you know, like day after type pregnancy tests, women thought they were having problems conceiving. Make love with their husband or boyfriend or whatever, and all of a sudden they'd get a little breast tenderness, a little moodiness, a little symptom picture going on that was just like their first child. And then that 30-day period would come along and they'd have maybe the late period or a really crampy period or just a funky, not smooth cycle. And they thought, geez, I really thought I was pregnant. But I must not have been. Well, they were, yeah. And about seven or eight years ago, as of that time, it was considered to be one of the primary causes of what was previously known as functional infertility, where they didn't know that the woman, they thought the woman was not conceiving, but in reality, they had conceived, but within the first or second month, lost the baby for different reasons. Big part of it is low progesterone levels, insufficient progesterone levels. From a Chinese medical perspective, deficiency of kidney yang, not enough juice to hold on to the baby to sustain two lives, because the baby cannibalizes the mother. That's why the bones get sore and they bruise easy and the gums bleed and hair gets dry and skin gets dry a lot of times in pregnancy. What, dry? But it's actually very true.
A fruit? Fruity.
Yeah, you know what? I could probably shift into something like that, but the fruit doesn't deliver the same message because we don't see that happen to the tree. The fruit doesn't wither. The tree doesn't wither, I mean, with the fruiting of it. And there is a very definite drain of nutrient power from the mother because the baby wants to live more than anything else and the mother wants the baby to live. So kidney yang deficiency. So the therapeutic principle is to tonify kidney yin and or kidney yang. In the first case, if it's lack of conception, well, in either case, if it's lack of conception, you want to tonify both kidney yin, kidney yang. The yin in Chinese medicine is like the substance of the body. The yang in Chinese medicine is like the function of the body. If we don't have enough nutritive substance for the baby to live on, conception can't take place or the baby can't hold on. If we don't have enough functional strength to support the baby's life, again, either conception doesn't take place, or more commonly, if you have kidney yang deficiency, ovulation doesn't take place. The ovulatory part of the cycle is considered the yang part of the cycle. And we're going to talk about very specific protocols in a little while. There are a couple of ways to tonify kidney yin and kidney yang. The first way is to use kidney yin tonics. But I guess first we have to say, how do you recognize kidney yin deficiency? Chinese medicine, we say that the kidneys rules the bones, is in control of sexual reproduction and maturation, provides the root energy of the body, that it opens to the ears, that it manifests on the hair of the head, and gives us or reflects our innate vitality. The kidney yin aspect of it also gives us our essential moistness.
Logically do rule the metabolism of water and the elimination of fluidic waste matter, urination. So we start by asking a handful of questions. Do you have frequent urination? Yes or no. Ringing in the ears, because the kidneys are said to open to the ears. Lower back pain, because the kidneys are situated right in the back. So if you have kidney qi deficiency, you're going to have lower back pain in almost all cases. Weak joints, because the kidneys rules the bones and rules the joints. In men, meal pattern baldness is a perfect sign of kidney yin deficiency. Circles under the eyes. But then you have to also ask, are you prone to thirst? Because the yin gives us our essential moistness. If our essential moistness is deficient, you get thirsty. Or you physically look. Do they have dry skin, dry eyelids, dry hair? Do they have symptoms of dryness? Low energy because of the lack of vitality, or low sexual function? All these are kidney yin deficient signs. Kidney yang deficient signs are all the same with one exception. There are all those other symptoms and signs plus coldness, pure and simple, plus coldness. So physically, cold hands and feet, subject to chills, frequent upper respiratory infections because they don't have resistance, or subject to drafts, you know, really susceptible to drafts and chills. So it's all those kidney deficient signs plus coldness. And from a gynecological perspective, a lot of times if a woman is really in touch, if you have a clientele that's really in touch with themselves, their physical selves, they'll tell you, my uterus feels cold. And you can physically palpate right over the uterus. And you can physically feel the cold in the abdominal area. Feel the stomach, it's warm. Feel the back, it's warm. Feel the right over the uterus, physically cold. And it is called cold uterus syndrome, or accumulation of cold and damp in the channels. And there are specific therapies we use for that, and I'll mention some. So we use kidney yin and yang tonics. The primary kidney tonics of Chinese medicine include Ramania, or Dihuang, Ramania, R-E-H-M-A-N-I-A. Cornus, C-O-R-N-U-S, or Shan Zhu Yu, Cornus. And some animal products like tortoise shell. These are kidney qi, kidney yin, kidney essence type herbs. Schizandra is another one, Wuweitsa. The primary kidney yang tonics are things like euchomia or duzhong, D-U-Z-H-O-N-G. That's one of the primary kidney yang tonics used in Chinese medicine, which is also specifically used to prevent miscarriages.
What was the other name of
it? Duzhong, D-U-Z-H-O-N-G,
or
euchomia. Remember, before we get too far into the list of individual herbs, that all these herbs are always used in formulas. They're never used as magic bullets, and we'll talk about specific formula. So anyway, so the bottom line is you build kidney yin, you build kidney yang, but also you want to disperse coldness One of the primary herbs used in gynecological treatments for dispersing coldness is an herb called Evodia, E-V-O-D-I-A, or Wu-Zu-Yu, if I remember right. Fourth one, spleen qi deficiency. Remember I said spleen produces blood. What I didn't say is that the spleen also is controls the holding of the organs and the tissues in their place. So one of the ways that you, or one of the most common signs and symptoms of severe spleen qi deficiency or spleen qi collapse is prolapse uterus, or any organ prolapse, varicose veins, hemorrhoids, things like that. The primary signs and symptoms of somebody that's spleen deficient, I already mentioned: gas, indigestion, abdominal bloating, malabsorption, blood deficiency. Because if the spleen can't break down food, can't build up the blood, that's it. Also, edema, especially middle body edema. The stereotypical pear-shaped physique of some women, stereotypical spleen, damp constitution, because the fluids tend to pool up in the middle area versus the legs or versus the upper area. Low energy, gas indigestion, abdominal bloating, again, because it's yang deficiency, signs of coldness. Prolapse, organs, lack of vitality in general, and the tongue is going to be very pale for the most part, and probably going to have a thick white coating because the spleen isn't drawing down the fluids and mucus builds up in the tongue. Use the same type of qi tonics that we mentioned up here, Attractolotus, Astragalus, in some cases Cardinopsis, and hot spicy foods, ginger, cardamom, cinnamon, things like that. Yes, sir?
There's a lot of breakthrough bleeding, especially in the menopausal.
You have to look at the other signs, because you could have heat, you could have blood heat issues, because heat drives the blood. So if there, and in menopause you get hot flashes, things like that. So for example, if you were if the predominating symptoms were low energy, malabsorption, prone to varicose veins, hemorrhoids, coldness, pale complexion, spleen qi deficiency. If predominating symptom is hot flashes, emotional, anxiety, restlessness, sleeplessness, things like that, then I think you got to look at heat signs. And so that maybe there's heat driving the blood, and you'd have to clear the deficiency fire. It would be deficiency fire, but you would have to clear deficiency fire. I know most of you, maybe many of you don't understand that he does, but so that would be the primary differentiating. But you got to look at the whole picture, not just one symptom complex. So tonify spleen yang, and we're going to try to kick up the pace here a little bit. Next one, irregular liver qi or constrained liver qi. I said the liver controls the smooth flow of qi and blood, rules the emotions. If there are signs and symptoms of stagnation, emotional ups and downs, we have to regulate qi, liver qi. Herbs again, cyperus, xiang fu, or Sarsaparilla muxiang. And lastly, yang deficiency in general, but cold channels, cold in the channels. But it's the same as, pretty much as the same as kidney yang deficiency, but it's not just kidney yang deficiency. The coldness accumulates in the channels. That means they're showing pronounced signs of coldness and low energy and lowered vitality. And you physically can feel the cold on the skin and especially over the uterine area. These are the primary pathological states associated with the majority of functional gynecologic conditions that we see. If we can recognize the signs and symptoms of each of these, then we go right into the books and they tell us, tonify blood, regulate qi, move blood, tonify kidney, tonify spleen, etc. Takes the guesswork out of herbal medicine. So let's talk about other differentiating principles. In a lot of gynecological imbalances, there's pain associated with it. When you have pain prior to menses, that means there's qi stagnation, which is under the dominion of the liver. The reason being is that, the liver is in control of the smooth flow of qi and blood. And so for the blood to come menstrually, the liver has to let go of it. It has to let go and relax to let that blood flow. If it doesn't, the uterus goes into spasm. So that pain is due to qi, a liver qi stagnation. And so you don't use painkillers, Percocets or what's the common, Midol, for that type of pain. It's going to do nothing. It might get rid of the pain, but it doesn't functionally change the problem. You got to regulate liver qi with the herbs that I mentioned. Pain during menses, it's because of blood stagnation. So the liver has let go, but the blood doesn't want to come itself. And again, the signs and symptoms of blood stagnation, you press and you have sharp, stabbing, focalized pain. That's how you tell one way to tell the difference. After menses, pain is due to blood deficiency. This is actually a key principle of healthcare in general. If whatever sign and symptom manifests after menses, migraines, headaches, emotional stuff, it's because of blood deficiency, because the body has just lost that blood. So if the sign or symptom that shows up is consistently after menses, it's always due to blood deficiency. Doesn't matter what the symptom is, you tonify blood and you're going to deal with 80 to 90% of those symptoms, because it's only a reflection of this relative deficiency. Could be arthritis, it could be nausea, it could be lightheadedness, it could be, you name it actually, pretty much anything. You always go to the core, which is blood deficiency. If the pain is worse with pressure and it's sharp and stabbing, that's called an excess condition, and I said it's due to blood stagnation. If it's better with pressure, i.e. the person says, yeah, oh, that feels really good, press some more, that type of pain is usually dull and achy. That's due to deficiency. In the first case, we have to dispel blood stagnation to get that blood moving, and possibly clear heat. We didn't talk about heat syndromes too much, but if somebody is running hot because they eat a lot of fried foods, take drugs, drink a lot of alcohol, or otherwise live a normal American life, heat causes fluids to congeal. It dries them so that they don't move so smoothly. Cold also causes fluids to congeal, but in a different way. So if there's too much heat, that's going to lead to blood stagnation, and that person will exhibit heat signs. Red eyes, a fast, rapid surface pulse, a ruddy complexion, a red tongue. All these are going to be signs and symptoms. Irritability, anxiety, insomnia, or dream-disturbed sleep, because the heat rises and affects the emotions. So you have to clear the heat in order to treat that type of blood stagnation. But if it's better with pressure, then that's a deficiency syndrome, and you have to build, nourish, and nurture that woman. Just two different protocols to do the same thing. Localized stabbing pain, I said blood stagnation, pain that comes and goes or moves, that's qi stagnation. Undefined pain with the sense of coldness in the channels, we got to disperse it. Pain with the feeling of distension, liver qi stagnation. Just simple principles of differentiation between the different types of pain. But it makes a world of difference in the therapeutic protocols that we apply. So, if we want to just make a quick correlation between Western diagnostic syndromes, what time do we go till 12:30? If we want to make a clear or simple diagnostic correlation from a Western TCM perspective, amenorrhea, which is a lack of menses, is due to blood deficiency or liver qi stagnation. Dysmenorrhea, which is difficult, sometimes called painful, but mostly this is difficult, menses, liver qi stagnation or accumulation of cold. Fibroids, blood stagnation or liver qi stagnation. Ovarian cysts, qi or fluid stagnation or accumulation of cold. And actually, these can all have an excess heat component, again, that causes blood stagnation. It's just not normally seen, at least I should say in my community. Endometriosis, blood stagnation, the normal flow, normal pathway for blood to flow is blocked. And infertility, functional infertility, the inability to conceive. Kidney yin or kidney yang deficiency, because they're not ovulating, or blood stagnation. Those are the primary correlative principles. One key thing to be aware of is that it doesn't really matter what the name of the condition is, because what you need to know is what is its confirmation. Is it amenorrhea due to blood deficiency or liver qi stagnation? Is it dysmenorrhea due to liver qi or cold accumulation? Is it fibroids due to blood stagnation, liver qi stagnation, or excessive heat, etc.? The confirmation is much more important than the name that the Western doc gave it. But it's still, there's some general principles that we can follow.
If you're able to deal with the key principle and the
There's two ways for endometriosis to be resolved. One is that you bleed it out, you physically bleed the tissue out, or it's just reabsorbed and you don't know it's gone until your period gets regular.
So it could come and go.
Oh, it does come, it can come and go, yeah. It often comes and goes. And that's one of the reasons why they have women, put women on hormonal therapy, it goes away, but then it comes back. Pregnant, after pregnancy comes back.
So if you address the
I've done it a lot, many times, and I talked to several Western female herbalists who have a very, very difficult time with fibroids, ovarian cysts, and endometriosis. And again, I only believe that the reason is that there's not a diagnostic rationale to tell them how to go after it. So you're stuck, you're stuck with a hit or miss type thing, where, okay, for this one, I think I'll try black and blue cohosh or viburnums or dong quai by itself out of the context of Chinese medicine. And it's just simply because they don't have the rationale as to how to go after it. At the same time, I've talked to some TCM practitioners that have a very difficult time with it too. I might just be lucky, but I've had remarkable success with fibroids, ovarian cysts, polycystic ovaries, not just one, but polycystic ovaries, functional infertility, and endometriosis. I mean, incredible success over the last 15 years. I don't understand why other people have a hard time. There are other things we have to talk about too, but. Yeah, but again, you have to do your differentiation. So if the person is exhibiting heat signs, you would think twice before using cinnamon bark. But cinnamon bark, for example, if there's cold accumulation in the channels, then you would absolutely use cinnamon bark in conjunction with the kidney yang tonic or some other liver qi regulating tonic. You would absolutely use it. And it's going to factor into some of our formulas. Somebody else had a question? Nobody can read them anyway. So basically, there's many conditions, but it doesn't matter what the name of it is. The underlying imbalance is more important. The underlying balance, meaning this, liver qi stagnation, cold accumulation, blood deficiency, kidney yang deficiency, spleen yang deficiency, that's more important than the name, amenorrhea, dysmenorrhea, or the symptom of a fibroid. So, we go over a few of the primary herbs that factor in on gynecological formulas. The first one, one of the ones I talked about already, Romania, or Di Huang. It nourishes blood, it nourishes yin, because it's a moist, cloying herb, and when you use it raw, it clears heat, clears blood heat. So if there's heat associated with that type of blood stagnation, Romania, raw Romania, is a great herb to use. For raw, yeah, uncooked. The cooked Romania is used more to nourish blood, to build blood. The raw Romania clears blood heat. And this is another important aspect of Chinese medicine, is that depending on what the syndrome confirmation is, will determine what process you use for that herb, whether you use fresh or dry ginger, whether you use raw or cooked Romania, or dangui to versus dangui wei, the head versus the tails. All these, this Chinese medicine has a lot of subtleties to it. Dioscorea, or shan yao, Dioscorea, Chinese wild yam, consolidates qi of both the kidneys and the liver, predominantly from a reproductive perspective. Ginseng tonifies qi, tonifies spleen yang. There's a misconception that ginseng is a male herb. No, it's a qi tonic. And if you're qi deficient, whether you're young, old, well, within reason, whether you're young or old, you can use ginseng, but typically you don't use it on young people. You reserve it for the old people. What's that? Panax. Chinese panax. There's no specific age cutoff, but for example, one of my teachers said, if, you know, ginseng's the king of the qi tonics. If you use the king when you're young, what are you going to use when you're old? So, but it's for qi deficiency, whether in man or woman, and spleen yang deficiency. Cornice fruit, shan su yu, a very underutilized herb. Also hard to get good quality shan su yu on the market. Tonifies kidneys, consolidates kidney, replenishes yin, and nourishes the kidney essence. So very specific from the infertility, inability to conceive perspective, especially for men too with regards to sperm health. Poriococcus, which we didn't mention already, which is fuling, eliminates dampness. It basically drains dampness through the spleen and through the stomach. One other symptom or sign of spleen qi stagnation is dampness accumulation that could result in blood stagnation. It is very common. I should have mentioned it more prominently before. Peony. There's two different types of peony. One is called bai shao, one is called qir shao. There's actually three. One is called bai shao, one is called qir shao, one is called mudan pi. They're all different types of peony. Actually, qir shao and bai shao are from the same plant. But the white peony, bai shao, builds blood and consolidates yin. The red peony specifically moves blood. Bai shao, the white peony, also clears heat. The mudan pi, peony, consolidates the yin of the kidneys. You don't have to really memorize this, because the nice part about Chinese medicine is once you have the diagnostics, you go right into the book and it tells you the herbs. You go right from the herb book into the formula book and it tells you the formula. Bensky and Barillet's Formulas and Strategies is one of the most artful books I have ever seen developed, because what it tells you, you get the confirmation, it points to the formula, and then it says, if you have this sign, this sign, this sign, add this, take this out, add a little bit more of this, and have a good day. Bensky and Barillet's Formulas and Strategies. The same guy who did the Chinese herbal medicine, Dan Bensky, Seattle, great herbalist. Alisma eliminates damp and clears heat. Dangui builds blood, moves blood, and because of that, blood is the mother of yin, so it also nourishes yin, and because it's moving blood, it relieves pain. Ligusticum moves blood, and again, because of that, relieves pain. Eucomia builds kidney yang and prevents miscarriage. Acaranthus, a seldom utilized herb in Western herbal medicine, widely used in Chinese medicine, nourishes kidney and liver yin, specifically major herb for arthritis and arthritic pain. Lycee berries, gojitsa, tonifies yin, tonifies blood, nourishes kidney and nourishes liver. A great herb. White peony we talked about, red peony we talked about, shang fu, the cypress, regulates liver qi, and because of that, relieves pain. Safflower, a major, honghua, safflower, moves blood, dispels blood stagnation. Peach seed eliminates blood stagnation. Evodia eliminates cold. We talked about mugwort and motherwort. We didn't talk about before. Both of them strongly move blood, motherwort especially. That's also why it's used for cardiovascular disease, because it dispels blood stagnation. So, few specific principles with regards to formulation. For kidney deficiency, one of the basic formulas that you begin with is Romania 6. So those are for people that have trouble conceiving and are exhibiting signs of kidney deficiency, which I talked about. Low energy, ringing in the ears, lower back pain, frequent urination, things like that. Dryness, thirst, yin deficiency signs. This consists of Romania, Horia, Alisma, Dioscorea, Mudan, P, and Cornus. This is Romania 6. Romania, Poria, Alisma, Dioscorea, Mudan, P, and Cornus. That's the primary basic formula for tonification of kidney yin. If you have all those kidney deficient signs and signs of coldness, which we said was kidney yang deficiency, you add two herbs. Aconite, and that's the Chinese processed fuzi, and cinnamon bark. And that turns it into a kidney yang formula. So this would be a type of formula you might look at for anovulation, lack of ovulation. If you have severe symptoms of kidney yin deficiency, excessive dryness, tooth problems or sensual problems as far as inability to hear well or see well, all of which come under the dominion of the kidneys with regards to the clarity by which we can sense things, but especially hearing. But if they have real strong signs of dryness, you take out aconite and cinnamon and you add ophiopagon and asparagus, maimandong, or even schizandra, which helps you hold on to fluids. Ophiopagon, so maimandong, asparagus, maidong, and schizandra, or schizandra, wuweitsa. And when you add ophiopagon and schizandra, that gives you my way, Di Huang Wan. I'm sorry, I didn't mention this. Romania 6 is Lu Wei Di Huang Wan. You add aconite and cinnamon, it becomes Ba Wei Di Huang Wan. Lu is 6, Di Huang is the name for Romania, and Wan just means pill. Ba is 8. So this is Romania 6, this is Romania 8. Ophiel Pagon and Shazandra becomes My Way Di Huang Wan. If you have signs and symptoms of deficiency fire, which you mentioned, which is very specific in menopausal symptoms, where the fire is flushing up, you have sleep problems, anxiety, moodiness, things like that, you don't use any of those herbs, but you add philodendron and a nemarina, and that becomes, I'm sorry, Cherbai Di Huang Wan.
What syndrome is that for?
Kidney yin deficiency. So it's kidney yin deficiency with deficiency fire rising, the heat signs in the face. But here's a perfect example of how you take one basic formula, the Romania 6 formula, and you modify it simply by the addition of two herbs to create a formula that's appropriate for different syndromes. The person might be every one of those people might be experiencing infertility, but they just have a little different symptom picture than maybe somebody else. And so you're just really focusing on what that person specifically needs. And the closer you are on your diagnostic rationale, and the more you know about the formulas, then the better your prognosis is going to be. So that's basic kidney deficiency based on infertility. The major formulas used for blood deficiency begin with Dangui 4, which is Dangui, Peony, Baishao, Ligusticum, and Romania. Romania builds blood, clears heat. Ligusticum moves blood. Peony builds blood, consolidates yin, clears heat. Dangui builds blood and moves blood. This formula is one of the oldest formulas of traditional Chinese medicine, Dangui 4. Dangui 4. If you have also symptoms of qi deficiency, you take these four herbs and you add ginseng, attract the lotus, poria, and licorice, which is called four noble gentlemen. Four noble gentlemen. But when you these two are together, it's called Ba Zen Wan, or eight precious pills. Ba Zen Wan, or eight precious pills. Some people call it women's precious. Si Wutang, yeah. Si Wutang and Si Jinzitang. That's these two formulas put together. Actually, the original formula was Ba Zen Wan, which is about 780-year-old formula, is the combination of these two. And then 350 or 360 years ago, some herbalist guy broke these two apart and made them separate formulas. But the original one was Ba Zen Wan, and then it was cut down to two formulas. And this one was predominantly used for qi tonification, this for blood tonification, but together they tonify qi and blood. So that's what you need in a blood deficient, qi deficient person. In this case, ginseng tonifies yang, and spleen qi attract the lotus, eliminates spleen dampness, tonifies spleen qi, or regulates spleen qi. Poria coccus drains dampness. Licorice is a qi tonic in and of itself, but also harmonizes the whole formula. Ligusticum relieves the pain. Romania clears heat and builds blood. Peony clears heat, builds blood, nourishes yin, or consolidates yin. Dangui builds and moves blood. Now let me put one other idea down for you. This is not a wisdom tooth. It is not a molar. This is the Dangui root, at least the roots that most of you probably see, which are the flat slices, right? Out of the ground, it looks more like this. Much thinner. These are sliced and pressed. And actually, when you see these really wide ones, They're actually three roots put together, as it looks like one. Soak it in water just for about 5 minutes, and it just falls apart. The three roots fall apart. They make it look bigger than it is because you get more money for it. If the woman you're seeing is exhibiting signs and symptoms more of blood deficiency than blood stagnation, more coldness, more fatigue, more dryness, but they don't have the stabbing pain or the lumps or the clots or stuff like that, you use the upper part of Dangui. If they have more symptoms of blood stagnation, clots, stabbing pain, stuff like that, cramping, use the lower part of Dangui. And actually, if you have bleeding out problems, you just use the head, the very head of it, and you ash it, or calcine it, or bake it almost to a, you know, really charred Dangui to stop bleeding. It is used for hemorrhagic bleeding postpartum. But a more common another one that's actually widely used is motherwort, interestingly enough. Motherwort works really well. But another one to use formula-wise is Buzhong Yi Qi Tang. Because a lot of times when that's happening, Buzhong Yi Qi Tang, pills to tonify central qi. That's how it translates. When you have postpartum hemorrhaging, you get a couple of things going on. Is mostly the uterus isn't cramping up. The uterus isn't getting back into contracted state. From a Chinese medical perspective, that's called collapsed qi, almost like a similar prolapse thing. You want to pick up collapsed qi. You make a strong tea, a Buzhong Yi Qi Tang, to help pick up that qi so that you get the uterus back in shape. How do you know she's going to do that before, if they have a history? Yeah, if they have a history, you know what? I don't have the midwifery experience to be able to say, because, my intuition tells me yes. If I want to be an anal theoretical person and say that Buzhong Yi Qi Tang picks up qi and you don't want to do that because you want the baby to come down, Buzhong isn't going to keep a descending baby from doing anything, in my opinion. So in a heartbeat, I would give it. My wife is a midwife, and they use motherwort, they use shepherd's purse, cramp bark. I think black har is a better choice than cramp bark, viburnum prunifolium versus viburnum opulus. But that's only my personal opinion. Again, I don't have the midwifery experience, so I don't really know. I'd be interested in finding out. So, let me tell you one more. Actually, let me go real quick. When in the notes, you have a description of all of these formulas, all right? Take the time to read each of these formulas. My focus for you is to get you the basic diagnostic principles so that you can make a confirmation on what's going on. Because once you have that, then you go into the books and they tell you exactly what to do. I don't have to stand here and take an hour telling you, take this formula for infertility. That's not traditional Chinese medicine. Traditional Chinese, it's not holistic medicine. Holistic medicine is understanding what's the underlying imbalance that's happening with that person. The nice part about Chinese medicine, then you can just jump right into the herb books and they tell you exactly what to do. So there's, a half a dozen or eight formulas here that are used for infertility, miscarriage, clearing cold from the uterus, treating blood stagnation, qi stagnation, and blood deficiency. I showed you a couple of ways that formulas can be modified. So please look at these. A couple of other principles I want to point out. Within the gynecological cycle in Chinese medicine, they consider it to be a 28-day cycle that should follow the waxing and waning of the moon and the ebbing and flowing of the tides. That's what Chinese medicine says is a healthy gynecological system. More babies are born on the full moon than my wife definitely can attest to that. But they divide it into four sections in which different parts of Chinese physiology predominate. So from day one to day seven, blood is predominating because blood is flowing. However, after blood is lost, then the body has to replenish that. Blood is the mother of yin. So the body has to work at replenishing the yin blood that it lost. At day 14, which is ovulation, you move from the yin phase to the yang phase. Basal body temperature rises, and ovulation occurs, or should occur, at day 14. So that means yang, the function. Blood and yin are the substance. Yang and qi are the function. So you lost the blood, you lost the substance, and you have to replenish it. Now, there has to be some meaning to this substance, and that is conception. So yang predominates and basal body temperature rises, 14 to 21. 21 to 28, now the qi of the liver has to let go of that blood. It has to cause it to descend down into the uterus, to fill the uterus, the cup of the earth, or the vessel of the earth. And it has to let go so that menses can flow again unless conception takes place. And then that blood, you know where that blood goes, actually, and from a Chinese medical perspective? Huh? No, into the breasts. Into the breasts. That's why immediately you get breast distension and sensations, because it's going to start producing nourishment for the baby. So that 9 months of blood that would normally be, the energy that would normally be shunted into blood production, is going to milk production for the baby. This is a beautiful concept that beats the crap out of what Western medicine has. The point of this scenario is that if you have predominating symptoms from day one to day seven in a woman's gynecological cycle, blood is, the flow of blood is the issue. If you have symptoms and signs that occur from day 7 to day 14, blood deficiency is the issue because they're a relative state of deficiency. Those symptoms arise. If you have symptoms that arise from day 14 to 21, it's the yang aspect of the cycle that's tweaked. And lastly, from 21 to 28, it's the qi aspect. And so again, you identify what part of the cycle is affected the most. And then you look, okay, are there really a lot of blood signs going on with this woman? Blood stagnation or blood deficiency? If the more answers are yes than no, that becomes the focus of your treatment. If it's yang deficiency because they're really cold, and they also are exhibiting cold signs, then you give yang tonics, qi tonics or qi regulating tonics. This is really more qi regulating than qi building, just so you know. But again, it just gives us a way to really hone in on what's going on with that woman diagnostically. The last thing is fibroids, endometriosis, ovarian cyst. Whenever you treat internally, you want to treat externally. So you do ginger compresses over the ovaries, over the fibroids, and 8 out of 10 times the blockage is in the lower left quadrant of the abdomen. Just, that's the way it is. And I talked to a doc yesterday. She gave me some reasons as to maybe why, but we don't really know. And there's just more tissue over in this way. So maybe more, because more tissue, more propensity toward blockage. So that's the first thing. Ginger compresses, castor oil packs, moxibustion. Moxibustion is one of the best things you can do, especially when you have accumulation of cold in the channels. You want to do big time moxibustion all in this area underneath the belly button. And what's that? Yeah. I don't do direct mox. You can do indirect moxa, which is using a stick or a moxa pot, or direct moxa, which is actually putting moxa on the skin, burning it down, and then either doing scarring or non-scarring moxa. I don't believe in doing scarring marks, except one exception, which I don't have enough experience to say if that finding is consistent, so I won't even bother telling you about it. But I always use the sticks or pots. Or you just take a cardboard box, little cardboard box, you put a piece of aluminum foil in it, throw the moxa in it, light it, and just move it around the abdomen, or compress it with a hot water bottle covered with a towel. The other thing for accumulation of cold, for a cold uterus, is cupping. In Shanghai, we would put 2 or 3 cups right across a woman's abdomen. After we did moxa, put the cups on, throw a towel over it, or a heated towel over it, throw it in the microwave, throw the towel in the microwave, and put it over the abdomen, over the cups, and just gently, every 2 or 3 minutes, just kind of just gently move the cups, just a little bit of movement to get that blood stagnation breaking down and moving up. And acupuncture, there are specific acupuncture treatments that are worthwhile. I don't do acupuncture, I just focus on the herbs and cupping and moxa. So that's the first thing, external treatments along with the internal treatments. Second thing, expect the period to change. If what you're doing is working, the period is going to change usually within the second month. If it's blood stagnation, that means that the period is going to come earlier than normal, heavier than normal, cloudier than normal. Those are good signs. You're working out the endometriosis, working out the cysts, working out the fibroids. Third principle. You generally don't use blood stagnation dispelling treatments if there's already external bleeding, as is the case in some fibroids and endometriosis. Oftentimes you do have bleed outs. Practitioners can do it. I don't recommend that lay people who aren't really hardcore practitioners do it, because you can cause them to bleed too much. The one key principle that differentiates between whether you use herbs to dispel blood stagnation, because remember, in fibroids and endometriosis, the underlying imbalance is blood stagnation, but the symptom is bleeding out. So then you have to be a little gingerly about it. So the differentiating principle is this. If the blood is dark and cloudy, you can use therapies to dispel blood stagnation. If the blood is bright and red, you do not want to use herbs that dispel blood stagnation. You want a symptomatically magic bullet, and as quickly of a way as possible, stop and control the bleeding. Give them a month to build and replenish the blood. Then go and use blood dispelling or blood stagnation dispelling therapies. But it's over a period of 4 to 6 weeks, a couple of weeks of really focusing on stopping the bleeding, 4 to 6 weeks of really building and nourishing the blood, then you follow up with the blood stagnation dispelling therapies. Fourth principle, just get through it, is generally speaking, many of these formulas are not used in pregnancy because they're used to dispel blood stagnation. You don't want to dislodge a developing or attaching fetus. However, in my experience, nothing short of a strong abortifacient is going to give up a baby in a healthy system. I've seen people take these blood stagnation formulas for up to 6 months. One woman throughout her cycle delivered normally, another woman 6 months, many women 2 to 3 months before they realize, oh, I shouldn't take this formula anymore. Never seen it be a problem. So those are four basic principles that we want to pay attention. Oh, one last one, no matter what you do, the minimum time that you want to treat is for 3 cycles, ideally 6 cycles. Every other month, the ovary switches. 1 month, one ovary ovulates. Next month, next ovary ovulates. In an ideal situation, you want to go back, forth, back again at least one time, ideally twice. In a nutshell, that's TCM's approach to dealing with gynecological imbalances. And it really gives us a system. A couple of books that you want to look at, which I'm not sure that I actually put recommendations in the back, and then I don't have to take time to tell you about. Bob Flaws has translated a couple of textbooks of gynecological treatments. They're a little bit heady, very much scholarly works, in my opinion. You don't have to get that sophisticated, or in my experience, you don't have to get as sophisticated as some of those therapies are, but nevertheless, it provides you with a tremendous amount of theoretical framework for how to approach gynecological imbalances. Flaws, F-L-A-W-S.
Bob Flaws, Blue Poppy Press in Colorado. There's a couple of good gynecological textbooks out there, and more coming out all the time. So thank you for your attention. Sorry to keep you 10 minutes over. Appreciate it.